Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Ask a Voter. Good morning, everybody. It's so emotional. It's such a big day today. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the 2018 edition of Ask a Voter. The polls are now open today on these midterm elections, and keeping with our ritual on elections, it's Ask a Voter today. And as the world and nation watch what happens this cycle in Orange County, thank you everyone for all the attention and getting things mainly right. I'm going to be checking around the country, Florida, Wisconsin, and Indiana, along with some opening local voices. So vote. Get your friends, your family, your coworkers out to vote. Check your registrars of voters' information wherever you are. We'll be right back after a short station break. Welcome back to Ask a Voter. My very first guest is a poll worker within spitting distance of this station. She's a government employee, so political preferences aren't going to be a part of it, but voters can sure talk about a lot of things. Just introduce us a little bit to you.
Hi, my name is Monique Wong. I'm just a biologist and super excited to see all these young voters come out today.
And where exactly is your polling place where you're working?
My polling place is located on campus. It's very close to the student center and also near the admissions building.
Okay. And so can you, from where you are you able to see where the triage center is set up by the Orange County Registrar of Voters?
Where I'm standing right now, I actually walked away from the area to get a better vocal. Oh, you can hear me better away from all the hustle and bustle.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
But I can see the signs.
Okay. And when you walked there, was it busy over there, Monique?
We were getting a slow flow, but I heard that early voting had a huge wave of voters. So, and also this is a college campus, so I assume afternoon we'll get a huge wave of students as well.
Okay. Well, what I do on Ask a Voter for my first-time guests on this election theme, so I've done this now, Monique, since 2010, so there have been lots, and it's been primaries and general elections, and I ask everybody, Monique, when did you first register to vote?
The moment I turned 18, and I've never missed an election.
Oh my gosh, you're my poster woman for today. I think most of the people I'll be talking to are the poster people. So you've been a habitual voter, and how does it feel to have that habitual voting sensibility coursing through your system?
I love the fact that this is my opportunity to voice my opinion, my beliefs, my hopes for my county or my state, my country.
And what were the circumstances or who was on the ballot when you first registered to vote, when you turned that fresh 18?
Yikes. That will date me a lot.
No, that's okay. I don't mind. I date myself to George McGovern. And no problem.
Let's see. For the president, it would be the Bush administration, actually.
Okay. 92? Or 96?
It would be in 96.
96. Okay. Well, that was quite a year. They're all quite a year. So, and I know you're as a poll worker and therefore a government employee for today at least. So tell us though, in your way, why are you voting today?
Well, since I told you I never missed an election, like I said, it's just to always voice my choices, my opinion, and hopes for my county and my country. So that's basically it. I will never miss an election either. I'm vote by mail, and so I will always have the option, if I'm not even in the state or even the country, I'll get a chance to vote.
Okay. Well, let's have you describe a little bit. You were talking about the early voting was vigorous, and that means early voting in the over since October 30th or early voting just this week. How are you gauging that turnout?
The turnout I heard from the people working on the polling site right now, they said even yesterday they had a huge group of students just registering to vote and voting. And what's exciting, and I just discovered, is that this district, you can vote up to this very day. If you still haven't signed up, you just have to go to the OC Register Voters and vote.
You register and you vote the same day. And California is one of a handful that are doing that. So, yeah. And have you been aware of the all the attention that this Orange County has been getting from, I might say, regional, national, I might even say international press? Have you been feeling that yourself? Been colliding?
Oh, yes. Orange County has a lot of attention, I've noticed. Certain districts more than others as I've been listening to the radio.
So you, the biologist, why are you doing this poll working? What are you finding out? Tell us, make a pitch for Neil Kelly's cadre of poll workers.
Well, I personally decided that I've worked polling sites before in the past, and I haven't done it in probably a decade, but I just want to see young people vote, and I specifically requested this polling site because it's neat to see the excitement of these young voters come out. It just reminded me as a child.
Exactly. So you want to, let's hear your pitch as we close the interview here. Your pitch for why it's important that people turn out today.
This one is seems like it's a very close race. So if you want your voice or your beliefs noted or even counted, this is an important one. Actually, they're all very important. So, always vote.
Always vote.
Always vote.
Well, Monique Wong, poll worker today on the UCI campus near the Student Center in addition to the Triage Center, she's checking in at the poll there and working there. And how many people are in the line right now?
It's kind of slow right now. Like I said,
9 o'clock classes.
As I recall, when I was a undergraduate, I didn't wake up until noon. So I expect after lunchtime that we will see more people come out. But if not, everyone set those alarms. Wake up, come out, come vote, come in. We'll help you. Whatever the case may be, we'll help you figure out how you can vote today.
Absolutely. Well, Monique Wong, thanks. So glad to have you be our very local voice. We're going to take community radio to other communities around the country today. You're our leadoff voter and voice. And thank you so much for being on Ask a Voter today.
Thank you.
Well, that was Monique Wong, and she told us all about what the scene is right there on campus at UCI. I'm going to take a station break, and then we're going to hear from Sue Jones. She is calling it in from Madison, Wisconsin. Breaking a little rules on alternative radio, chartered radio. We played Emerson, Lake and Palmer's Fanfare for the Common Man, because that's what we do on the Ask a Voter edition. It is now my pleasure to have as my second guest on the Ask a Voter edition, Sue Jones. She is a watershed. We're having a watershed moment. She is a watershed steward calling this one in from Madison, Wisconsin. She has been on Ask a Voter on a couple of previous cycles, and today she is right there placed in Madison watching things that we can't see up as close. Welcome back to Ask a Voter, Sue Jones.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
I'm so glad that you're able to be with us, because we're, as I want to say, that news from state to state doesn't quite travel so much. Sometimes it's just sort of like the sordid, tawdry details that move around, and we're going to get into the earnest sort of electoral details. First on your ballot is your governor, Scott Walker, who is seeking election to a third term. Is that the last term he has a crack at?
I am not sure about that, but yeah, first elected in 2010, and a lot of concern about his rollback of public bargaining rights, or bargaining rights for public employees, and a whole host of things. So he's in a race this year.
He's in a race. And so the third term, and he survived the recall that was 2 years into this term, where the collective bargaining was on the chopping block. And he's chopped a lot. And he's thrown in. I mean, I don't know how much you have any breaking coverage about the obligation he saddled the entire state with, till, I think it's till like 2040, with the Foxconn financing package. Has Foxconn's taxpayer liability, has that been a campaign item?
It's been a concern. Environmental protection in general has been a concern throughout the entire Walker administration. But yeah, the public cost of up to $4.5 billion state investment, and a Marquette University poll that just came out about the election in general also asked if people think that the state is going to see the return on that investment, and we're evenly divided as a state about the benefits of this, and there are significant environmental concerns about it.
Okay. So, I mean, do you hear people, is it an everyday conversation of the Foxconn package, or is it just sort of a ticking time bomb, fiscally speaking?
Depends on the circles you're in,
yeah.
I think, that, you know, here's a proposed project that's 3,000 acres in southeastern Wisconsin. It will require a diversion of 7 million gallons a day of Lake Michigan water. I mean,
wow.
People who care about the environment are certainly paying attention to this.
Well, I would think people that drink water would be.
That too.
I mean, that is, I think, as sizable as a constituency as you can get. Well,
right. So, and that's high visibility. Some other environmental concerns,
yes,
have not been as high visibility. Unless you're a rural resident in central Wisconsin and your well with nitrate levels is way above the federal contamination levels, then you're paying attention to water issues that are maybe for some people more under the radar screen. But large-scale agricultural operations that are resulting in nitrate contamination are certainly a concern.
That's your area, the whole water quality, watershed, everything. So that must have been very hard for you to watch at the time prior to your retirement.
It is, and I think it's really energized people in some races in that area, too, that appropriate environmental protections have not been maintained in the Walker administration. So people are quite concerned about that and paying attention to state Senate races for candidates who are vowing to make that right in those areas.
So there's a metaphor that begs to be used, that the blue wall is like the water wall, the watershed moment. I mean, all those metaphors for this election, this midterm election in,
yeah,
Wisconsin. And so over his position on the ballot is your U.S. Senate reelection for Tammy Baldwin. There's been a lot of movement in her prospects. So tell us, and I want for listeners to appreciate that Tammy Baldwin's one of her earliest day jobs was as a board of supervisor for the county where Madison is located. I forget the name of the county, Sue.
It's Dane County.
Oh, Dane,
yes, she was,
of course,
elected to the county board many years ago.
When
and,
you were there.
She was the first female member of Congress for Wisconsin in 1998. It's a shame that it took us that long, but we did it with Tammy when she was elected to the House. And then when she was elected to the Senate in 2012, she was the first openly gay U.S. senator. So she's seeking re-election to her second term.
And so what are some very important policies that are being highlighted in this campaign for the U.S. Senate?
She she's always been concerned about health care and it tells very compelling personal stories about her own family situation and her mother's addiction and just the importance of solid health care in her own life. She's running against a nurse, Leah Vukmir, a state senator.
Yes.
But there are big questions about temperament in this race, I think, even anecdotally talking with people who somebody went to a campaign event and met a Republican who was going to vote Republican all the way down the ballot, except for Tammy Baldwin, who followed up very well on some constituent matter. And I think she has the reputation, even now recognized by the State Journal, just recently endorsed her, typically a conservative editorial outlook, endorsed Baldwin in part. You know, she is a senator for all of Wisconsin. She follows through for her constituents and makes people like that person who a friend met say, "I'm voting for Tammy, regardless of how I usually view the world."
Where, Sue, is Volkmeyer from? Which part of the state? Milwaukee?
I don't recall. Okay. That's the 5th Senate District, strongly allied with our current president. In fact, one of the factors in the State Journal's endorsement of Tammy Baldwin was that Vukmir would not distance herself from the president, saying that the press is the enemy of the people, and said that conservatives especially should value the role of a free press in a democracy. And she would not be independent enough for the residents of Wisconsin to distance herself from some of the extreme things that have been said by our president.
Okay. For those of you who've just joined us, you're listening to Ask a Voter, my Ask a Voter edition for this midterm election on November 6th, and you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and there's so many different social media platforms you can find us on. Just put the KUCI in and you'll pull it all up. My guest in this segment is Sue Jones, Watershed Steward, calling it in from Madison, Wisconsin, and we're looking at her ballot. We're looking over her shoulder at the selections, except for not on her ballot is the open seat, the first congressional seat that Paul Ryan is vacating for, assuredly is a high-paid private sector influence peddling some kind of job, I'm guessing. So, Brian, I don't know, is it Style or Steele? And Randy Bryce are running in that open seat.
I believe it's Style, yeah.
Style. And they get the most alliterative opponents in a race, Style. Ryan Style, Randy Bryce. And so this is a very close race right now. It's sort of probably been going back and forth. What issues, I mean, I think the whole state is watching that seat because of the power that Paul Ryan had.
Yeah, that's true. Paul Ryan held that seat for 20 years.
Well,
it is the only House race in Wisconsin of the 8 seats that we have that is much in question. And so a lot of attention for a lot of reasons. I think the Democrats are looking at this as a chance to send a very strong message to the Republicans. Even though this is a Republican district, I think people are fired up, and they do want to send a clear response. Healthcare has been a big deal in this district as well. The Democrat, Randy Bryce, is a cancer survivor, a very, very colorful background in general, but is a cancer survivor, and he supports Medicare for All, which Mr. Bryce does not. And Bryce has several really interesting statements over the course of the campaign. And about this issue in particular, he said, "It's more than past due for us to look out for each other," and really calling out to the looking out for the common good, you know, looking out for the neighbor.
So for being the common good, common man guy, he's had some bumpy history. So he's managed to sort of bring out a fuller portfolio to advance his campaign?
He is. You know, he's an iron worker, an Army veteran. He has had some run-ins with the law, especially many, many years ago. But, you know, I think he calls to other people and said, you know, look, we've all had difficulties in our lives. But I'm looking out for you because of these larger issues about health care and about fairness and about democracy.
Well, Sue, is there anything else you want to tell us about what is going on in Wisconsin today in the midterm elections?
Well, I can't tell you that I've had the chance to talk with several people who are involved in local get-out-the-vote efforts here. Madison is a blue bubble within a bluish-purple state. But if I think organizers know that if the turnout is really, really high here, it can really help things go for the Democrats. And so they're reporting more volunteers than even the presidential
wow.
election in some cases. Our early voting turnout in Wisconsin is ahead of the 2014 midterms, not quite what it was in 2016. So people are really enthusiastic. I think they're organized and ready for a change. We've had 8 years of Republican Senate, Assembly, and Governor, and I think the momentum for change is here in the enthusiasm that people are reporting to me.
Wonderful. It's the momentum, may we see it continue and roll from time zone to time zone all the way to the West Coast today. Sue Jones, watershed steward and personally good friend of mine, thanks for being on today's edition of Ask a Voter.
My pleasure. Thanks for caring about the heartland.
We always do. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. We'll be back with another voice. I'm hoping it's from South Bend, Indiana, with Marcos Scouza. To the show. That's Tina Raymond's Lift Every Voice and Sing. We're going to see how many voices the USA can lift today. My next guest calling in from Tallahassee, Florida, and there is so much that is an epicenter of. We are so glad to have covering it for us. The inestimable Ann Bidling Meyer, the one who got everybody out of high school writing and reading with structure, with intention and creativity. Ann Bidling Meyer, welcome back to Ask a Voter today.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm so glad. I keep finding really interesting copy coming out of just your governor's race alone. But let's roll it all the way back. There's been a lot happening around Tallahassee, around the Panhandle, around the entire peninsula. That's Florida. Do we start with the hurricane or do we start with the Rick Scott trajectory in his first election as governor? Which one do we take on?
Well, probably the Rick Scott trajectory came first.
It came first. And so he was sort of, he had to, as you told us in a couple of cycles ago on Ask a Voter, he had to master some speech impediments so that he didn't really campaign that first cycle, but he certainly mastered it now. There's not a whiff of that.
No, so he's done well.
And he's also managed to sort of keep ahead of some of his questionable business practices that could help fund his lively campaigning ventures. So tell us, Rick Scott is running. He's challenging incumbent U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. What's going on in what's the talk about the policies on the line between the two?
Well, Nelson is a lot more progressive and forward-thinking, and Rick Scott has been very traditionally conservative. He has just slashed the budgets for environmental practices and laws. The Department of Environmental Protection has been decimated. We're seeing the blue-green algae caused by big sugar industry being allowed to pollute into our lakes and streams. And it's been pretty much of a disaster in Florida. In fact, his employees are not even allowed to use the word climate change in their correspondence or their conversations. So that's where Rick Scott's coming from. But pursuant to that, because the Gulf is warmer now than it used to be, we had a hurricane come through that is beyond anything I have ever seen. And I've grown up in Fort Lauderdale and spent the last 40 years here in Tallahassee, and I have never seen a storm like that. It absolutely decimated Mexico Beach and parts of Panama City and Chattahoochee, and I don't think that those communities are going to recover.
Well,
at
that's
all. So
what
we're
our
bounding back, trying to rebound from that.
And along with this, it's an uncanny, significant demographic for the U.S. Senate challenger Rick Scott. That's his base that has had their voting infrastructure decimated. So what are now the panhandle that was affected is it's about, let's say, 45 minutes to an hour's drive to get into the swath of the hurricane, or is it even less than that from where you are in Tallahassee, Ann?
It's about 45 minutes to an hour. Anything within 50 miles of the eye of the hurricane can result in terrible damage. We were expecting the eye to come fairly close to Tallahassee, but it swerved. So we got off lucky. We had sand dune-sized piles of debris and limbs and brush and all that, but nobody was really seriously hurt. Some homes were damaged, but we felt that we were very lucky because we can clean up after ourselves, and people in other panhandle cities can't.
Because so much damage. So there are measures. I've heard coverage about Rick Scott making sure that there was some kind of machinery set up so that the panhandle residents could support him where he needs it in the margins.
Florida is really two states. The panhandle in northern Florida has a lot of Republicans. Tallahassee is a lot more progressive. It's better educated. We did not elect either Trump or Rick Scott. The rest of Florida did. But we've got two states at work here. We've got the northern part, north of Orlando, which is more conservative and mostly Republican. And then we've got the southern part, which I describe as a tropical New York,
right.
A lot more liberal, more Democrats there. And I'm just hoping that the Democrats can pull through. We've got a number of races in Georgia and Florida that are going to make a huge difference if Democrats win.
I was wondering, Ann, putting these notes down earlier, is are you in Tallahassee in some of the Georgia, easy for me to say, media market? So are you catching some of the political ads and
of
the discussions?
Yes. Our local TV channel caters to Valdosta, Thomasville,
Albany?
And Tallahassee as well. So
okay.
we get dual coverage.
Where Tracy started out in the Albany, Georgia area, but Albany is beyond the media area for Tallahassee then, listeners?
We don't get a whole lot about Albany.
Okay. So, and in Tallahassee, you have your mayor. I mean, he's the sitting mayor, Andrew Gillum, and he is running for governor against Ron DeSantis. So what do you want to say about where that's going?
It's anybody's guess. We're all trying to be optimistic. We didn't think that Gillum was going to win the primary, but when he did, he really jumped onto a very articulate and professional bandwagon. His speeches were great. He was almost Obama-esque in his rallying to the cause. And he's become an excellent speaker with a lot of charisma. DeSantis has been a Trump supporter, and there's no secret about that. So it's basically Trump versus Gillum in that race. A lot is riding on it. And so we're just holding our breath. We're hoping that Gillum is going to come through. But strange things happen in Florida. It's just a sort of a bizarre state when it comes to politics.
And so, I mean, he's come back to Tallahassee to be mayor as far as when the hurricane swept through, and then when you also had the shooting at the yoga studio last weekend. So he's been around for that, and then to be doing the right thing, to be the statesman, to fulfill that part of his role as mayor of Tallahassee. But so tell us there's more to say what's going on. Is that shooting contributing to the discourse of the election?
Yes, it has, because we're all of a sudden gripped with more and more fear. And when you see Trump on the stump, he insinuates that Tallahassee is just a terrible, terrible city. It's crime-ridden. A lot of that has to do with our population. We have three or four universities here, and they're not full-time Tallahassee residents, and when you take a look at the crime, they only measure it against the permanent Tallahassee residents, not the county as a whole. So the crime is not as bad as what Trump says. There's lots of insults going on coming from Trump, lots of fear tactics, and we are certainly hoping that Gillum is going to win so that we can get beyond that. And the shooting was something that, you know, we're saying to ourselves, well, if you can get shot and killed in a yoga studio, where are you safe?
No,
so
kidding.
It's really taken the community just we're at a loss as what to make of it. And the shooter himself was a substitute teacher for a while and was fired for unethical behavior. He's described as somebody very similar to the Parkland shooter in terms of his behavior and his depression and his misogyny and his hatred. And we're seeing more and more of these people having access to lots of guns, and people are beginning to think, well, nobody is safe. But we are hoping for the best in this election.
What would you say on the statewide ballot would be like the most significant driver of the outcome we would see at either the end of today or the end of this week?
Is the candidate?
The candidates are is the governor's race really the one that has the hot and cold running sorts of campaign positions?
I think both the governor's race and the Rick Scott versus Bill Nelson Senate seat.
Okay.
Those two are probably the most salient in the state in terms of political outcomes.
So for those of you that just tuned in on Ask a Voter, my midterm election edition of Ask a Leader, my guest is Ann Bidlingmeyer, and she's calling in from Tallahassee, Florida, the panhandle where so much is happening right now. There's every conceivable fascinating breaking detail. And including on your ballot and statewide is the most interesting Proposition 4 that would allow nonviolent felons who've served their time to be re-enfranchised as voters. And it needs a 60% plurality on this ballot. Tell us where that is now and what's the reaction? What have the debates been like?
Well, there has not been a whole lot of debate about it.
Really?
Most of the people I talk to are in favor of it. I have not heard any resistance to it, and I'm out in the community a lot. And I have not heard much opposition to this at all. It's just sort of a given that most people here are going to vote in favor of it. I can't speak for South Florida. You know, as I said, it's a different state entirely, but it looks to be pretty promising.
I mean, I've heard some estimates earlier this week that it could be successful. I find 60% at anything is a phenomenal outcome. It's a very hard, a high bar. And to add to that, there was a gentleman on a different radio platform this morning, an activist who cannot vote, is now, he was giving everybody an example of what a nonviolent felony was, and included in that was releasing a helium balloon.
Yeah, well, the laws in Florida are bizarre.
Like walking through a construction site as a shortcut. He went through a list of things, and that, my friends, is a racial privilege designation. So who's ever getting profiled and gets hit with a felony and then served their time and is disenfranchised with. So, and does this affect women as much as men?
I think it affects men more because they get arrested more, but I think it affects women too for, you know, various nonviolent things. Not as much, but I think this could be significant.
Yes, indeed. Well, is there anything on your ballot? I mean, you're going to have to get a new mayor, but is that going to be a special election after this? Because I don't know where Andrew Gillum's term is as mayor at this point.
He is going to, I guess, finish out the term as mayor and then be sworn in
as governor
at the beginning of the year.
He has to win first.
Yes, he has to win first. And so we're just kind of hoping with bated breath. Some of my colleagues, I'm retired now, but some of my colleagues who are still teaching have said that they are talking to their students about not bullying, not insulting, not criticizing, not slandering other people. And their comment is, well, Trump does it. You know, he's on the news doing it, so why can't we? So that's another outcome that will certainly be debated if DeSantis wins, and I hope he won't.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad to have your breaking news coming from Leon County, Tallahassee, the panhandle. I mean, Tallahassee's considered, well, it's not in the panhandle, but it's panhandle adjacent, I guess you could say.
Yes, it's panhandle adjacent. It's just sort of in the curve, as, you know, technically, I guess we are on the panhandle, if you look on a map.
It depends, I guess, where you're from in Florida. So.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Ann Bidlingmeyer, calling in from Leon, from Tallahassee, Florida, thank you for being on this 2018 edition of Ask a Voter. All the best. Good luck in getting a huge turnout in Florida.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Well, it's my pleasure. We're going to bring on Marcus Scoso in just a little bit. Be right back after this short station break. Thanks for staying tuned, everybody. It's my pleasure to bring you back Charlie Hayden's America the Beautiful. My next and my last guest on Ask a Voter is Marco Scoso. He's calling this one in from South Bend, Indiana. I wasn't able to get him in on my 2016 Ask a Voter show, so today I have to open with all of the political expertise that he has. I'm going to give him a brief introduction, and I'm going to ask him my stock questions. He's a research fellow at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. He completed his PhD, congratulations, Marcos, earlier this year at UCI. His research focuses on indigenous voices in post-colonial Latin America and issues of externality. That is the shorthand for all the amazing work he does, and where you can see he's got a toe hold in what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm going to welcome him to Ask a Voter, Marco Scoso. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction, Claudia.
Oh, thank you. We go back a bit, folks, and so I'm so glad to track him down there in Notre Dame. And since I didn't have you on the last election, when did you first register to vote? And tell us about the circumstances at that time, Marcos.
Absolutely. So I actually, I was born in Argentina, so I became a citizen in 2014. And I registered to vote in 2016. As I was concerned with, I don't know, some of the tendencies that the United States was kind of showing at the time that have proved to be a lot more concerning than I thought at the time. So I first became a citizen thinking about the institutional insecurities of Latin America. I study political sciences. I talk about politics all the time. And because I grew up in a post-dictatorial Argentina, I was actually afraid to lose some rights or to not be able to speak my mind in the United States as a permanent resident. At the time, everybody thought that I was being a little bit paranoid. But I went on and I got my citizenship and, you know, became part of the United States with political rights and such. And from there, I have to say, I'm just really glad I did so, because now with people losing their residencies in some cases or not being able to access passports and such, things have become a little more scary.
So people do they come back to you and say, well, we get what you were so astute in projecting? I mean, has that sort of settled in and people thought, well, no, we didn't get what you did, but we understand and you're a very good read of what some underlying currents coming to bear?
They have. Several people have come back to me and said, wow, I never really thought I was going to be looking at news with, I don't know, children being separated on the border or people losing their residency or green cards and such. and some of the fears that that's created within the immigrant community in the United States. It's something that we never thought was going to be taking place. So that emphasized the importance of citizenship, rights, a sense of security for myself, and also a sense of why it's so important to vote in current elections to maybe create a little bit of resistance, at least, against some of these policies that just, you know, despite the enormous amount of justification that they've received from some TV channels and such, you know, they're on the wrong side of history. And a lot of us know that.
So for the wrong side of history, unfortunately, for your offspring and mine and everybody else's offspring, the history is going to be lengthened with so many judicial appointments made in all the federal courts. So we're it's that history is, as we both can appreciate, as it's going to cast a very, very long shadow, this wrong side. So why are you, Marcos, voting today? That's my other standard bearer question for my newcomer voters.
So I do think that it's very important to vote. It should not be the only form of political action or involvement that we should have. You know, as a political scientist, I write quite a bit and I get involved as much as I can, as you already know. But voting, I think, creates the possibility of at least encouraging the legislative and the judicial, the legislative power mostly, to resist some of the things that are taking place and some of the things that the executive power is getting away with, President Trump and such. So the separation of the three branches in the government remains to be important, and I think that if we elect people that have the courage to resist some of the things that a lot of us think are wrong, then at least that's one possibility that I think we should all use. That's what democracy is there for us to do.
So for those of you who've just joined us, this is my Ask a Voter edition on the midterm elections today, November 6th. My guest and the last guest in this program is Marcos Scalzo, and a research fellow at Notre Dame right now. But Marcos, I don't know, are you registered? If you're a fellow there, I don't know where you consider yourself a resident. Where are you registered to vote for this election?
I decided to register here in Indiana. Okay. As politics in California were a little bit more clear than here, I felt I could make a little bit more of a difference here.
But you're missing out on, there is so much attention. I mean, we all have personal relationships with all the national newspaper journals. It's really, they're all, and they're covering it all. It's all the time, all the place. So it's a wild, you left the 45th Congressional District and it's just gyrating. I'd never thought I'd see it be so dynamic like this. So my earnest question is about what happened in the Southern Hemisphere two Sundays ago, and that's in Brazil's recent federal election. What's that like for you as an Argentine national political scientist?
Well, it's and there is another way to define it. The political science term would be, it's just horrible. I mean, it's just scary to see somebody so closely related to an insanely conservative part of the Brazilian military to come into power in one of the biggest countries in Latin America, and definitely one of the most influential ones. I mean, this has been a trend in Latin America since at least 2010 or so, where a lot of progressive governments started lose their stance to a return of a very conservative right-wing sector. So you see it in Colombia's state conservative, but you see it in Ecuador, you see it in Argentina with Macri, and now you see it in Brazil. The scary part is not only sort of the free market kinds of politics, which tend to create crisis in Latin America, but also the very conservative anti-rights movements, against gay rights, against a lot of the tiny little steps that Latin America had taken to ensure a more democratic coexistence in these countries. And you see things like the new president of Brazil saying social movements are terrorists, or that all citizens should now carry guns against these terrorists, or all just very radical notions of hate and feared, and the involvement of Brazil in Venezuela or in Bolivia. So it is indeed a very scary time, and the fact that these governments are feeling empowered by our current politics in the United States is also scary.
So would you say he's more, in Brazil, is he more Duterte than Erdogan?
I would say so, yes. I would have to agree with that. Sort of a discourse that does not care about human rights in any sort of way and presents itself as a strong hand against corruption is the rhetoric that is anything that is progressive becomes, quote, corruption. It's just a way to destroy opposition in whatever way possible.
So for those of you joining us, that we're listening to Marcos Scozzo, and he is calling it in from South Bend, Indiana, and he's my last guest here on Ask a Voter today. I wonder if because you take up these colonial and decoloniality themes, mm-hmm. it's an easy question, but it's a piece that may fit together. Does social media create the perfect storm of an echo chamber to reinforce to create a new sort of colonialism in the Southern Hemisphere?
Absolutely. The fact that the control of social media remains centralized through algorithms or influence of companies that have access to data have created sort of a different kind of colonialism. But it is definitely a Western notion of politics that becomes promoted way more than other voices may have a chance to be heard. So the case of Analytica in the United States in our own elections, for example, resonated throughout other countries and were actually proven to influence the presidential elections of Argentina, in which Macri won.
Okay.
And apparently he had personal ties with the company. So
Cambridge Analytica? With Cambridge Analytica, I wasn't sure if you're using Analytica as a generic word or Cambridge Analytica, the firm itself.
The firm.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness! And that was in 2014.
That was last year, wasn't it?
Just last year. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, well, what's the antidote to all of this besides information and literacy?
Well, I mean, I think we have to start listening to each other. Social movements and progressive voices tend to be fragmented within their own little struggles, which each one of them is really important in itself. But we should be able to listen to multiple struggles and regard each other as true in order to be able to confront a global problem that is very much sort of centralized, at least within single discourses or single notions of how the world should move from here. So if we keep fragmenting each other within the progressive or the alternative movements, then there won't be a possibility to act together as a coalition against some of these more deleterious effects that are suffering that are making immigrants and the LGBTQ community and several people suffer.
Well, you know, that is going to be that's a great note to end it on, is what the antidote is to this intense, divisive, and retro backward rolling, and we didn't even in this discussion get a chance to bring up what is on the line with climate change policy in Central America, mm-hmm. in South America, because we have run completely out of time. Marcos, thank you for being on Ask a Voter today.
Thank you, Claudia. Thank you very much for having me.
Marcos is a research fellow at the Kroc Institute of International Peace and Studies and giving us the last installment on Ask a Voter today. Well, that is my wrap. Next week, I'm going to have a little Me Too exploration from around UC Irvine. Vote, folks. Take your friends and family to the polls. OCVote.com is your source on the web, and there is the Triage Center and the poll open now until 8 p.m. today. And as Josie Duffy Rice has penned, she's an activist attorney out of Atlanta area. Her line is, democracy is not seasonal. Stay in the process from tomorrow, y'all. Talk with you next week, and thank you everyone for listening.